This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Invest Talk. Invest Talk is the place to become a better investor, where reason and common sense prevail. I try to stress that anybody can do this. Anybody can invest in the stock market, but you have to have a lot of common sense, and you have to understand what you're investing in. And you don't look at it every minute, every hour, day to day. You can't. You got to look at it a longer term. You leave the minute and days and swing trading to the professionals, because you cannot do that. But you can do very well investing in the market. Our company, KPP Financial, is a registered investment advisor firm. We're governed by the Securities Exchange Commission and, of course, the state of California. We're not allowed to recommend stocks or other securities. You'd never hear me say, buy this, sell that. I only answer questions. We can comment on whatever stocks you call about. I can do that. I cannot tell you what we bought yesterday. By the way, we bought something yesterday in the oil sector, but I can't tell you what it was. And I've been telling you, wait till oil prices have calmed down, and I still believe that. You leave the picking of stocks on the, you know, the technicals and fundamentals in a market like this to professionals, but you can still do very well if you follow common sense and use reason. And an oil industry, that's what I'm asking you to do. Now, we're here every weekday to answer any money questions. Since we're live weekdays, 4 to 5 Pacific time, we can have a two-way conversation. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART, and we'll be taking our first call in just a couple of minutes. It might as well be you. Give us a call. Given the time of the year, I thought we might visit our booklet shelf on investtalk.com and give you a mini review of some of the handpicked books there. You know, there's the Intelligent Investor, the definitive book on value investing by Ben Graham. If you don't know who that is or you've never heard of that book, then you need to really brush up, because this is the Bible of value investing. It's been around since the 30s. And been reprinted and reprinted and reprinted and updated, of course, but it's still the Bible of value investing. And it's not a simple book, just so you know, it's not. But it needs to be in your library. It talks about evaluating stocks and how to buy. It was originally published in 1949. Ben Graham was around the 30s and 40s. This book is unusual in that it interrupts three different books. It's called Warren Buffett's Three Favorite Books, A Guide to the Intelligent Investor, Security Analyst, and Wealth of Nations. Have you ever tried to read The Wealth of Nations? I have it right here. I have it right here on my desk. I flip through it, you know, every so often. This is by Adam Smith, and it's a very good book about money. A very detailed, complex look about money. And it's really interesting. And then we have The Confessions of a Stockbroker. I like that book a lot, The Confessions of a Stockbroker. Those are some of the books that you can take a look at. I just listed a bunch of classic books on investing. And you'll see them there on my website. If you're looking for a beginner's book, that still will, or one that will fit your experience, it doesn't matter. My own book, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor, is for beginners. You can see those books, all the others right there. You can get them through Amazon by going to InvestTalk or by going to InvestTalk.com and scrolling down to the book list. Now let's pick up the phone and get to the Q&A portion of the program. 888-99-CHART. You can reach us 24 hours a day.
Hello, Steve. This is Jay from Los Angeles. I have a question. I hear you always saying that there are trillions of funds in the sidelines which is not invested. Where do you get that information from? Do you look at any websites, or how do you know that there are trillions of dollars sitting in the sidelines? If you could please answer my question, that would be great. Thank you very much, sir. Bye.
Well, every so often we get reports where the money is. You buy this information. We buy the information, and it tells us how much money is in money markets and how much money is sitting in cash reserves. So we buy that information, and we get it. And every so often it is reported in the popular press. You can Google it, and you can get the information. And there is a lot of money still sitting on the sidelines. There's a ton of money in the bond market. And that doesn't, you know, when you say there's a lot of money on the sidelines, that doesn't mean it has to come into the market. It just means that it can come into the market. And if there's not a lot of money on the sidelines, then it can't come into the market. Therefore, it has to be already invested somewhere. So it's just an overview of where the money is. And we buy the information. I don't know if there's any website I can point to and tell you where to get it. I don't think I can. But the information is out there. I would Google it if I were you. You know, mutual funds have money, have cash reserves. How much? You know, many of the prospectuses that you read, that they'll hold up to 10%, some even more, of their assets in cash. And that's available, but they got to worry about redemptions too. It's a difficult thing to say, well, there's so much money on the sidelines, and therefore that money's going to come into the market. It's a difficult thing to know when, how much, how fast. No one really knows. Good question, though. The elements of time can nearly always trump all other investing factors and can dictate the makeup of your portfolio. How much time do you have for your investments to grow? How to make the best use of the time factor? That's one of our main talking points today. We're going to talk about that. I have five questions that can predict whether you'll be rich or not. Five simple yes-no questions. I think we're going to take that to a little yes-no test. These five questions are simple questions, and the answer is yes or no. The average score is 3.01. You get 1 point for each right correct answer. And I just think we should talk about it because it's kind of fun, and I'm going to give you the questions. Why does the EU countries, why do a number of EU countries, why are they wanting their gold back? They want to bring their gold back to their country. What are these countries and why? How much gold are we talking about? Does it really matter? I just think it's fascinating. And why, what is big money saying where to invest in 2015? Where is the big money? I'm talking about institutional money. Where are they saying, what? Where do they say you should put your money in 2015? And in fact, what are they saying where not to put your money in 2015? And have you heard the rumors on McDonald's? The rumors? If you haven't heard them, I'm going to go over them. We're going to talk about that. Is that good, bad, and different for McDonald's? Those are the things I'm going to discuss. Unless you give us a call, we'll talk about what you want to talk about. You always comes first. Caller always comes first.
This is an InvestTalk market update for Friday, January 9th. The week ended with an end to a two-day winning streak. U.S. stocks ended lower. Investors mulled over December's jobs report. It was good, and it was not all good. Call it a mixed view of the economy. Energy stocks fell just like crude oil prices. The Dow fell 168 points to 17,739. The S&P 500 lost 17 points to 2,044. And the NASDAQ composite dropped 32 points to 4,704. So the tally for the week, the losses were spread evenly across the indices. Dow dropped 0.5%, the S&P fell 0.6%, and the NASDAQ 0.5%. This market update made possible by KPP Financial. If you have a question for Steve or Justin, don't wait. Get it to them now. It's 888-99-CHART, and they'll answer it on the next InvestTalk.
James in Sonoma. How you doing, James?
I'm interested in your comments on closed-end bond funds, particularly the BlackRock funds, only because I have it's for an IRA, and I have absolutely almost zero bonds in my IRA or in my retail account, and I'm getting a little nervous like everybody else is. I'm the same age you are, and and I'm just sort of interested in your general comment on closed-end bond funds.
54 years old, a closed-end bond fund. A closed-end bond fund means that he's looking for income from that, the dividend yield, and is the dividend yield supportive by the price, all those kinds of things. A closed-end bond fund means, since closed-end, means that it can sell at a premium or a discount to the value of the bonds inside the fund. Okay, so it can be worth more or less, but you're really buying it for the dividend. And you'd like to buy it at a discount to the net asset value versus a premium to the net asset value because it's safer to do so. And if your question is, should you have one, I have no problem with having part of that being in your portfolio, but not a major part. At 54 years old, not a major part. If you're younger, I'd say have less. If you're older, I would say have more. As you get older, I would prefer to see either a mutual fund that's not closed in because it sells right at net asset value, depending on what the interest rates are going to do. If the interest rates are high, bond funds are great to buy. If interest rates are low, they're not so great to buy.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART is our number. You can reach us right now on any topic on InvestTalk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Don in San Diego. Hi, Don.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I appreciate your call.
The market in general, and I know you've mentioned the callers before, you said it seems like every time you buy, the stock goes down.
Yep. Doesn't it feel
now,
like that?
Do we have a disadvantage, us investors, on the West Coast as opposed to the people that are closer to the action? They're right there in New York and can see the market moving and move quicker than we can?
Well, you know, a few years ago, I would have said yes, but I don't think so. Not with the advent of electronic trading. Not anymore. You can see as much as they see if you have level 2 NASDAQ, level 2 trading platform, you get to see every trade as it appears to the same people on the floor in the New York Stock Exchange as the people on NASDAQ. You can see it just like they do. So, no, I don't think they have the advantage anymore.
Okay.
I think they did.
Is there any way that the large investors, the hedge funds, can move markets?
Oh, yes.
Without you just getting caught up, like you have a great stock.
Now, Don, that's a very good question. And the answer is yes. You and I, even me, with some of money to manage, I am subject to the big boys, the mutual funds, the pension. If they decide to get out of a stock is still very good and solid, like a Symantec, then they're going to drive that price down because they sell so much shares at one time because they have so much money. So yes, they'll push you around. Matter of fact, I'll say this. The institutional money is the money that pushes prices up and down. The rest of us are just going along for the ride.
Okay.
Just make sure you understand that. And when they start to sell, it's going to affect you and you have to make a decision. Are you going to fight this and fight the storm, just hold on through it, or are you going to get out before the storm comes?
Is there any one a service?
To know who's selling and whether their institutions are selling?
Uh-huh.
No, because they try to hide their selling.
That's what I understand.
Yeah, they spread it around the different brokerage. It's hard for them to hide because they're so big, and you see big blocks of trades happening. You know somebody is doing it, but you don't know who, and you don't know how much.
Okay. Well,
I appreciate the call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Over the last month or so, we've had quite an abundance of calls and emails asking about various big oil stocks. I'm kind of liking them. I told you I like them. We might want to be a little patient. This is Steve Peasley. You're listening to Invest Talk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Here's an invitation to become an InvestTalk Insider. If you were signed up, you'd already receive this month's economic and market forecast. It looks at the economy, U.S. equities, foreign equities, fixed income, commodities. It includes recommended portfolio weightings by sector, asset classes, and more. Sign up for free and be an InvestTalk insider on InvestTalk.com. Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Dave in Carlsbad, how are you doing, Dave?
Hi, how are you? I'm thinking of spending, investing about $10,000 in money market, and I don't know much about stocks and stuff. I was wondering that if I invest $10,000 in like 6 months or so, and the interest that I'm going to get off of that, how is that going to affect my taxes?
Any time that you invest in anything like a money market where they pay you dividends, okay?
Yes,
they pay you
5%.
That's right. They're going to pay you an annualized 5%. That money is added to your adjusted gross income on your tax return. The bank will send you what's called a
W-2. Like a W-2 form?
Yeah. And they send it like January, February, March, somewhere in there. They're supposed to get to you by the end of January. Okay. And that W-2 says, oh, you earned $282 in interest. And when you do your taxes, you have to add that $282 to your gross income. And that's what you pay your taxes, and whether you get back money or not, depending on how much taxes you paid during the year, of course. Now, if you don't add it, remember the bank sends that same little form.
Kind of like I'm working for somebody, like an employer that does that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, they send it to the government, so the government knows you got that $200 in interest. Mm-hmm. You know, so you got to add it to your thing, or else you're going to get audited someday.
So I'm also planning to open a business. Mm-hmm. If I invest through my business, not as an individual, but being a CEO of a business, how is that going to affect in taxes? Good, bad?
It's neither good nor bad, and in some ways it's good. When you form a business, you know, initially you usually don't form a corporation. You just do it as what's called a sole proprietorship. In other words, it's your business, it's just you.
Yeah.
And it's a sole proprietorship. The income that that business makes, it's offset by the expenses you incur. Let's say, just pick some numbers. Let's say you make $10,000 in the first month, but it costs you $5,000 to run the business. Now, you can leave that $5,000 in the business, or you can take some of it as a salary to yourself. And if you take it as a salary, that's income to you, and you have to pay taxes on it. The first year of a business, you don't have to pay any taxes till the end of the year. So, Dave, you got to be disciplined by not spending all the money if you have earnings. Because when it comes tax time, they say, oh, you made $42,000, and therefore you owe, you know, $15,000 in taxes. If you spend it all, you're going to be in trouble. But the good thing about being a sole proprietorship and starting a business, things you have write-offs that you don't have as an employee.
Yeah.
You have write-offs like gasoline, car repair. You can write off any kind of business lunch that you have or any. There's certain things you have. Not a lot. Don't think it's a lot. It's not. Dave, good luck. I hope you have some.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for your help.
Let's go look at some of the talking points I want to discuss today. How about, what is the relevant time period for your investment portfolio? This is one of the questions I ask consistently when I sit down and meet with people. Well, how long do you want to be invested? How long do you want this money to be invested? Because that tells me how aggressive you can or should not be. That's one part of the question. The other part is how old you are, what kind of person you are, you like taking risks or don't want to take risks. But one of the main points is, what is your time horizon? Now, people say it's short. Short to me means less than 2 years. Okay, if they say, well, just kind of, you know, intermediate, that's about 5 years to me. Anything, you know, anything 10 years or more is long term. So I look at, if you're 70 years old and you say, well, I want to be very, very aggressive with my money, I will then say, well, how much money do you have? And if you can't be that aggressive with what you have. Or I can say you do, because you have so much assets, and it really, for the next generation, not really your money, because you're investing for the next generation, because you'll never use it up. All these things, you got to look at, well, what's your time horizon? And the reason why that's important is because on a short-term basis, the stock market is crazy. On a short-term basis, the stock market can value stocks any way it wants. Look at 1999, 2000. earnings on those dot-com stocks that were nowhere ever going to have earnings, and the stock prices got crazy, right? The NASDAQ still hasn't made up that loss. The NASDAQ index still haven't. You're still below its peak of 2000. Still. See, so that's 14 years later. Depends on where you are, what's your time frame, and then it goes back to you know proper management of the assets in your portfolio. But time horizon is very important. You have to decide what your time horizon is. And, you know, I will help you. A professional will help you, and they'll say, well, you know, he'll give you guidance on that. But it really is, you know, it's really a personal thing. When are you going to start using this money? You know, how much risk can you afford? How much risk can you tolerate? And that means how much downsize can you tolerate? People get all hung up on, well, gee, you know, I didn't make any money this year. That's very possible. You know, that year to year to year, it 1 year is not a long enough period, because the stock market could do anything. Look at your Russell 2000, still down for the year. Here we are, you know, 2 weeks left, 2.5 weeks left in the year, still down. Well, while the S&P and the Dow are up, but the broader market not necessarily, pretty flat. Kind of interesting. What, you know, you got to think about what is your time horizon, and then invest, because it's going to be, if you're going to be aggressive, there are going to be periods of time where it's just not working, and then period of times you're going to be ecstatic. Yeah, that's just the way it is. Or do you want to take less risk and have more of a steady return? Again, besides the time frame, then it's what kind of investor you are, what you're comfortable with. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer your money questions. Don't save them up. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Okay, let's go to Jerry in Pittsburgh. Hi, Jerry.
What I'd like to ask is your philosophy on managing a 401k account.
Okay.
That all your choices are either mutual funds, index funds, or bonds.
Right.
How to best manage.
Good question. For all you 401k people out there, you are in charge of running your own money, and you probably need some help. One of the things I would suggest right now is stay away from the bond funds in those 401ks. That means no bond funds, and that means no mixed funds or no balanced funds if they have bonds. Most balanced funds are stocks and bonds. If interest rates are going to rise, your bond fund portion of your portfolio will suffer. Yes, you'll get a nice dividend of 3%, 4%, whatever it is, 5%, I don't know. The net asset value may go down 5%, 10%, 15%. What good is the 3% and 4% of the whole thing? When the interest rates are rising, that's where you stay away from bonds. You should probably gravitate, if in your 401k, over to more of the mid-cap value, small-cap value, large-cap value. The value side of the market versus the growth side is where I would be more comfortable in, if you have those choices. And don't hesitate to have a little bit in international.
Okay.
Okay?
Thanks a lot.
This is an InvestTalk market update for Friday, January 9th. The week ended with an end to a two-day winning streak. U.S. stocks ended lower. Investors mulled over December's jobs report. It was good, and it was not all good. Call it a mixed view of the economy. Energy stocks fell just like crude oil prices. The Dow fell 168 points to 17,739. The S&P 500 lost 17 points to 2,044, and the NASDAQ composite dropped 32 points to 4,704. So the tally for the week, the losses were spread evenly across the indices. Dow dropped 0.5%, the S&P fell 0.6%, and the NASDAQ 0.5%. This market update made possible by KPP Financial. If you have a question for Steve or Justin, don't wait. Get it to them now. It's 888-99-CHART, and they'll answer it on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. Okay, why do the EU countries, the European countries, why are they asking for their gold back? For instance, Austria was the latest nation who is in talks to bring back its 288 tons of gold, which is sitting, 80% of it is sitting in London. They want it back in their country. Or how about Germany? Germany taking back their 3,400 tons of gold, which was stored in U.S., London, Paris. It's almost all coming back to them. Netherlands, they're starting to talk about it. Why? They've stored gold. Every country has stored gold outside their country. It's not uncommon. It's common. But why all of a sudden in a lot of EU nations talking about bringing their gold reserves back to their country? What earthly reason could they have? Because there's no, it's still their gold, even though it's maybe stored in Wall Street or London. It's still their gold. It's their gold. You know, their country's gold. Why? Remember, we're talking about EU. The only thing I can think of is they're very nervous about the euro. The euro is, you know, is weakened, of course, against the dollar. Dollar is strengthened against almost every currency out there. So are they really worried about the euro? And, of course, they've been in this economic slump since our financial crisis, up and down, you know, and they're now down again. Are they worried about the euro not being able to, the EU staying together? Why? I don't have an answer for this, by the way. I'm trying to think of a reason why the heck would they want their money, their gold back. What for? What good? What harm? What good is it coming back? And what harm is it doing to them being where it is? On a rational basis, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. It's an emotional basis they want it back. So then if that's the case, what emotion are they worried about? It's got to be worried. It's got to be fear about the euro. If you follow us on Twitter, you can get your question in, a question or comment to us by sending us a message. The address, @ KPP Financial. Or you can reach us anytime by phone, 888-99-CHART.
Why not sign up to be an InvestTalk insider? Steve has a new info sheet on investing in oil stocks. That's brand new this week. For all InvestTalk insiders, you can sign up for free on investtalk.com.
John in Oceanside. How you doing, John?
How you doing? I'm pretty good. My question is, I heard this rumor people been talking about. If you buy a stock that is interest and you reinvest the interest and hold on to that stock, eventually you get rich. Is that true?
Well, it depends. Well, that's kind of a broad statement. When you say you're talking about dividends, right? When you buy a stock and it pays dividend, I'll tell you this: dividends make up about 30 to 40% of the return of the S&P 500 over the last 100 years. Dividends are very, very important. So when you reinvest them, the answer is it will help greatly get you rich. But you have to buy the right dividend-paying stocks. You can't buy a stock that goes out of business in 20 years or 10 years.
Like ExxonMobil?
ExxonMobil is a perfect example. It's going to last forever. You can buy a couple of drug companies, you know, that pay very high dividends. You also want to buy companies that are growing, you know, growing their earnings and growing their dividends. So it's not just paying the dividends, but also increasing the dividends. So, John, you can build like a little portfolio of these high dividend-paying, growing companies, and you'll do very well over time. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Now let's go talk to Paul in Alameda. How you doing, Paul?
Great. How you doing, Steve?
Good. Hey, thanks for calling.
My question was about ethical investing. Whereas, you know, me being an investor coming to money managers like KPP, Schwab, Fidelity, whomever, mm-hmm. and saying I don't want to do business with China because of, you know, my personal reasons, or companies that
or maybe you don't want to do tobacco companies or arms company, military companies that provide bombs.
Is that possible, or is it just too convoluted to ferret that out?
We at KPP Financial would not let you have that opportunity. We would not. But there's a lot of money managers that would be happy to have those kind of restrictions. Those guys will manage your money as an individual only, We have programs that we put you in that we all invest. Jerry and I invest our money right alongside your money. And we will invest where we think is best to invest. There are money managers, though, that will live within those parameters, Paul. So don't think you can't find that if you have that need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, yeah, there are people who do it quite often. They'll not invest in a list of – you can tell them, I don't ever want to see Disney in my portfolio. Okay. They'll do it.
Yeah, something like Disney's fair enough. It's just, you know, like I said, you know, maybe companies that don't pollute the water or something.
Yeah, I had a prospective client with a doctor, and she refused to have tobacco companies, certain drug companies, and she was listing all these things, parameters that she didn't want to invest in, and, you know, I had to turn her down because I said, well, our system won't let us do that. I can't, like, pick you out and say, okay, don't buy this or that person, when we might be buying, you know, Eli Lilly, and she may not like something that Eli Lilly does. I don't know. So we couldn't do that. But there are registered investment advisors, money managers that will take that in consideration. Yes.
Okay,
thanks
great.
For the call.
Thank you.
888-99-CHARGE is our number. So what is the big money saying where to invest in 2015? When I talk about big money, I'm talking about Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, institutional money. Where are they saying to invest in 2015? They're talking about Japan, Europe, and technology. And they're saying avoid energy and Russia. Now, I tend to want to do the opposite of what they say. Why? Because these are huge institutional investors, and when they say they don't want you to be invested somewhere, that means they're out of it, right? Now, I'm not going to Russia, I can tell you that. I think that's just a crazy place to go. But they're trying to tell you avoid energy. I'm telling you, I think I kind of like energy. They're telling you to move to Japan and Europe. I'm not so convinced about either one of those places for 2015. I think Europe might be okay. Not sure about Japan. And they're telling you to invest in tech. Well, it depends. I kind of like the small cap stocks for 2015. Why do I kind of not want to go with them on this? Because they are the institutional, very large money houses. And they're the ones that push stock prices around. So when they sell, or when they say to get out of something, or they're not recommending something, they're already out. When they say to get in something, they're probably already in. They've already pushed the market one way or another. They tend to be the market. So they certainly can't outperform the market. And if they say they're doing something, they probably have already done it. So I tend not to want to be where they say to go. Now, they talk about Japan next year. Well, Japan's been getting crushed. They're talking about Europe. Well, career perspective, getting crushed. And they might, you know, maybe they're not in there yet. I don't know. But I want you to, whenever you see big money houses talk about where they think the market's going to go or where they want to be, just remember, they will not give you inside information to what they're doing. They will not tell you exactly what they're doing. They're giving you a broad brush. And I've seen it happen way too many times, the experts being wrong. The experts are consistently wrong with their projections, it's just, you got to make up your own mind. You know, don't believe what you read and hear without deciding that you, with your down-to-earth approach, reasoned approach, your common sense approach to what they're saying. Okay? You have to put your own spin on what they're saying because they're going to put their spin. So just be very, very careful. Okay, it's time for Invest Talk 101, the good news and bad news about the stock market. First, the bad news about investing in the stock market. Over the short term, stocks can be really, really dangerous. They can do a lot of damage. For instance, the worst one-day experience is not 1987, that one day, the Black Monday. It was December 12, 1914, that stock market was down 24.4%. October 19th, 1987, it was down 22.6%. And if you want to know, you know, if you want to talk about pain, how about the dot-com implosion? We still haven't, you know, that was March of 2000 when that started, falling like a stone. And we still haven't made up back to the top, that we had back then. And, of course, in 2009, you know, 2008, 2009 crash, the market was down 45%. So what else do you need to know about stocks? You know there can be a lot of pain. Well, over the long term, stocks have historically outperformed all other investments, every kind, all of them. Historically, it's about a 10% return. The next best performing asset class, by the way, bonds. Long-term U.S. Treasuries have returned about an average of 5%. Those are the two best asset classes out there over the long haul. So what's the lesson here? If you're a buy and holder, you got to talk about decades, not years. Long periods of time. Long, long, long periods of time. If you're going to be in the market, there's days that you're not going to be able to avoid. The best days to invest after that 1987 crash was the very next day after it crashed. The market then went up till from 1987 to like 2000. Consistently marched up. 1987 to 2000. Yeah, there was down days and down weeks and down months in those periods, but if you just stay with the market from after that crash. But doing the same thing from the December 12th, 1914 crash, what happened after that big 24.4% fall? Do you remember the roaring 20s? So the market really, up to 1929, before the great market crash and Great Depression, 1914, 1929. You know, so think about this. If you have a huge down day, probably best time to start investing. Think about the crash of 2009. Now, that wasn't a day. That was a prolonged period. But look what's happened since then. So the lesson is here, just be prepared. You know, that's why you want diversification. That's why you want, you know, maybe some hedging, some protections, you know, every so often. You just got to be prepared. As an investor, you have to know that this is what happens if you're going to be in the stock market. Now, is there ways to hedge against that? Of course. Of course. But just be careful out there. You know, 888-99-CHARTER is my number, 888-992-4278. Have you heard about the rumors of what's going on McDonald's? Good old Mickey D. If you haven't, I'm going to share some of those rumors with you. Also, you did hear about the Fed's announcement after the Fed meeting here. It looks like the Fed is telling everybody to be calm because they're not going to really raise rates. They're going to take their time, be patient. And, of course, that's what drove the market today. It was up huge just today, you know, up, what, 287 points on the Dow, 96 points on the NASDAQ, and 40 points on the S&P 500. And remember, that's after what, 7 out of the last 8 days before today, the market being down sharply. Most of December, down. And it's still down in December. You know, it's still down. That today didn't make up for all December's loss. Didn't even make up for a third of December's loss. Well, maybe a third, almost a third. We're moving into the last segment of the hour. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let's see if we can get your question in before the end of the show. There's a line open for you, and I would love for you to use it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
Distribution of our podcast is made possible by KPP Financial. And one way to get a handle on investment risk is to understand how much you're taking. Here's a handy tool that can help you figure that out. It's easy to use. It's a risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. And by answering just a handful of questions, it can tell you how much risk you're comfortable with. Try it. It's free. You can do it right now on investtalk.com. Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to George on Liso Viejo. How are you doing, George?
Question about international markets. Do they run a cycle like we have in the United States, like the Christmas rally or the presidential?
They used to be very, very much tied to our markets, but they're getting less and less so. They do not have the Christmas cycle, other than us forcing them to the Christmas cycle. Remember, especially the international markets and in emerging markets in Asia, they're not...
Yeah, oh, no, I realize. I didn't mean specifically the but I meant, do they have other cycles?
Other cycles, I see.
Similar to that.
They haven't been around long enough, most of them, to have developed those kinds of things. Our market's been, it's old, and it's demonstrated years and years and years of cycles, whereas theirs has not been. And theirs is tied much more to their economy, their growth of commodities and farm, because they're still in their infancy as a market.
Yeah, I know. I see that one of the India funds I watched would go up a couple, 3 weeks, it'd be up 20-25%, and the next time it's down 15, it's like, whoa, it's kind
of a roller coaster.
Yeah,
that's right, George. George has hit the nail on the head. They can be, these emerging markets can be very volatile, and they are. An individual stock up and down 3% one day and down, up, down, and 3% day to day to day is not unusual for them. So you got to be prepared for that if you're going to buy these ADRs.
Yeah.
Boy, can it be a roller coaster, George. You're right on there.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, George.
Did you get your dose of Steve today? Steve Peasley's market commentary can't always put things right in the market, but it can put things into perspective. There for you every morning on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go to Lynette and Sam Bruno. How are you doing, Lynette?
Oh, fine, thank you. I really enjoy listening to your program. I listen to it on a daily basis.
Thank you.
The question I have today is, through a divorce settlement, I received a profit-sharing plan through my ex-husband. He's self-employed, and I rolled it over into an IRA.
Good.
It is in cash. I was wondering if I, and I'm not allowed to add any more to it, can I take that cash within an IRA and invest it in stocks, or do
Yes. You can invest that IRA in almost anything you want. It would be difficult to buy property. Not impossible to buy property, but difficult. There's lots of rules. But you can, like, buy mutual funds with it. You can buy a CD with it. You can buy stocks. You can buy ETFs. You can buy bonds.
Mm-hmm.
You can do anything you want.
Oh, good. I don't have to keep it in cash then.
No, you do not. And how old are you, Lynette?
59 and a half.
Okay. When do you start to need to take the money?
When I'm 70.
Okay. You don't think you need it before then?
No.
Perfect. Then you, what you want to do is hire somebody like me or do it yourself and buy stocks or mutual funds.
I see.
Because you have a good long time, 9 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And the market, almost in any 10-year period, the stock market is higher from this day. 10 years from now, the stock market will be higher. And if you want to talk about it more, Lynette, just call me at the office. I'll be happy to talk to you about it.
Or thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lynette. Let's go to Ken in the Bay Area. How are you doing, Ken?
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the call.
I'm calling from rainy Foster City and joined the show today. I wanted to ask you the difference between Royal Dutch Shell A and B shares. I really can't find what the difference is.
Okay. Very good question, and a lot of people that think this, but never think to call. Some companies issue different classes of shares. There's no difference as far as earnings per share and how much sales per share, no difference. The only difference that you have A and B shares, the only logical difference in almost 99% of the time is voting rights. Usually one share has voting rights and another share doesn't. Or one group, like the A group, may have voting rights, like two votes for every share they own, and the B group may have only one vote for every share they own. It's all about voting rights. Ken, and it really has nothing to do with the fundamentals of the company or there's something different about it, nothing. Nothing. It's both.
Okay, so nothing to do with the tax basis or because it's it's offshore. It has nothing to do with the
usually the answer. Most of the time, the answer is no. It has nothing to do with the tax basis. But you have to read what they are, why A shares and B shares, and they will tell you. But it's almost always about voting rights.
Okay, cool.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate the call.
Thanks.
Before we close for the hour, be sure to sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. You can access a whole list of helpful webinars on all kinds of investing topics, like my new info sheet on buying oil stocks now. Should you do it? Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thanks for listening, and we'll hope you'll be here again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.